Blog Talk Radio.
Handles, any one of my social handles at Laka Dash Report, which is on Twitter, Instagram, Laka Report 100, all small cat, also on Facebook, LakaReport.com, and also you shoot me a message directly via email at BarryBarnes@Laka-Report.com. All right, as you can tell, I'm excited. I love football. I love this game. Week 11 is here. Mid-season part of the year is getting in gear. Just that time of the year when you see players and teams just go at it because their playoff lives are in the midst. You have teams that's trying to fight for seeding situations. You have teams that's trying to stay alive and guys just fighting. And you have those teams, those spoilers, which is actually one of my favorite parts of the second half of the season. The teams you don't expect to win and don't expect to be a certain team that's really in the playoff hunt, come out and lose. I really love them. I love to see when guys are disappointed and guys are excited. That's the part of excitement and disappointment that I love to see. But after what happened last night with the Cleveland Browns and the Steelers, that is a part of the game that I don't like to see. You know, unfortunately, that, you know, with what happened with Mason Rudolph and Myles Garrett, defensive end for the Cleveland Browns and the Steelers, young quarterback, just eight seconds. And, you know, it's definitely really inexcusable. Unfortunately, Myles Garrett, I don't know him personally, but from just understanding who he is, he really is not a bad guy. I just hope that with all the talk shows and everything that's going to transpire for the next week and a half or so, at least, to when his punishment is revealed, I just hope that no one really trash this young man. He's really a good, hearted young man. And there's a lot of things that said on the field. Nothing condoning what he did. Definitely wasn't right. There are things that is said on the field, and I know that he was a headache for Rudolph all night last night. And you can see the frustration that Mason had, and you saw at the bottom and how Mason was trying to go for his helmet, and Garrett grabbed his helmet, ripped his helmet off. You know, so that definitely was some words that was changed in that power between them. There's definitely some things that was going on that tipped a man over the edge. But when you're a professional, we all go through it, and no matter what is said or what is mentioned, you know, you definitely got to keep your composure. And with him swinging the helmet after he took it off, when he took off Mason's helmet, I said, okay, he's definitely going to be injected. And then when he hit him with the helmet, I said, yeah, he's going to be suspended. And the Browns' chances of getting to the playoffs, it was already slightly ill despite them having the easiest schedule to finish out the rest of the season. I would not be surprised if they have Myles Garrett sit for the rest of the year, which is unfortunate because he's a good player. The Browns need him. He's their lead on the defense, and you don't want to have a chance to make the playoff or be successful, be wasted because of a situation that unfortunately happened. So, you know, hopefully a lot of good things. The good things will come from this. I know that Miles is sincerely sorry for what happened. And I think because of his track record, put it like this, if he's suspended for the rest of the year, I wouldn't be surprised. I know this is something that the league do not want in their game. But if he's just suspended for a couple of games, I would not be surprised that either, because he is a good guy. He's definitely a leader in this community. And I just hope that this does not paint a picture, a negative picture on Miles Garrett, because he is not a dirty player and it was not a heinous type player either. So that's the only thing that I really hope that does not come out, or he is painted as, because if that happens to be a case. I know you don't like to talk about regular stuff that goes on in the NFL, but I definitely will have something to say about that. You guys, this is the Locker Talk, Bachelor News Radio Network. We hear about NFL stars of today. And today's show is going to be really great. I'm going to talk about stuff, what to look for in Week 11. And then I'm going to talk about with my officials so far with their highlights that they had pretty much in the second half of the season, pretty much to that midway point of the season. I know that everyone has their opinion about officials. Everyone who listens to the show knows my opinions on officials, all because I associate with those guys. And I'm around, and I know the work, and I know the craft, and I know the effort that's put into it. So when I see these guys on the field, I know that these guys are working really hard. And these guys are truly the best in the business. They have everything in their corner to help them. And, yes, it's an imperfect game with an imperfect system, so there's always going to be that element there. But trust me when I tell you that these guys want to get it right more than the players, more than the fans. When I say they want to get it right, trust me, they want to get it right. And there's some things that they did that was on the field, on good on-field calls that they truly got right. I'm going to highlight those guys during this show today. All right, now, what to look for Week 11 next week, hopefully, I can start getting into some playoff scenarios. We're right around the corner for that. That's the sad part about the mid part of the season, that now we got to start talking about the end of the season, which sucks. But that's all right, though. You know, football in my life is all year round, so don't worry. You guys are always going to be loaded with a whole bunch of good NFL stuff. Now, if you're a Dallas Cowboys fan or a Tampa Bay Bucks fan, make sure you hang around. That's some good news on a couple of your players to watch out for. But we're going to start with the marquee matchup Sunday with Deshaun Watson as the Houston Texans journeying to Baltimore, M&T Bank Stadium, to take on the hot Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens. So it's going to be a great marquee matchup to watch out. Now, both players, Watson and Jackson, are the first two players with at least 15 passing touchdowns, 5 rushing touchdowns, and a passer rating of 100 or higher through the team's first 9 games of the season in NFL history. With 2 passing touchdowns on Sunday against the Ravens, Watson will become the 5th player in NFL history to have at least 20 passing touchdowns and 5 rushing touchdowns through his first 10 games in a season. The first in NFL history. The two have passed 3 players to accomplish this feat, earning Associated Press Most Valuable Player Award that year. Now, talking about with Deshaun Watson, who was really a true dual threat, this is going to be one of those situations that I'm going to definitely watch this young man, and hopefully he starts to get his props, because right now he's almost like a Russell Wilson. Recognizes being really good, but because he's not flashy or doing those, I would say, highlight reels all the time, sometimes he get overlooked, and he's starting to get that Russell Wilson factor in, but he is a solid quarterback through and through. He's the guy that I would definitely start my franchise with, hands down. Lamar is definitely getting there. We'll see how it goes if the Ravens do continue this path and make it to the playoffs. We'll see what type of football that will be played during that time. Now, your Dallas Cowboys fan, Zeke, one of the best running backs in the league, hands down, that since entering the league in 2016, Zeke Elliott led the league's NFL with 4,836 rushing yards. Appearing in his 50th career game on Sunday against the Detroit Lions, Elliott needs 164 rushing yards to become the fifth player with at least 5,000 rushing yards through the first 50 career games in NFL history. The other four players that I'm about to mention that that actually achieved this feat are Hall of Famers in Eric Dickerson, who is top of the list at 5,597 yards. Errol Campbell, Houston Oilers, who did it with 5,411 yards. Jim Brown, 5,248 yards. And Terrell Davis, 5,062 yards. So Elliott can join this group if he have a breakout game. All he needs is 164, and he can enjoy the elite Hall of Fame group of running back. After the game last week, he's going to want that. Now, racking up the yards. Now, last season, Carolina Panthers running back Christian McCaffrey had 107 receptions and surpassed Matt Forte, the solid running back from the Chicago Bears, when he did in 2014 when he had 102 receptions. But Christian McCaffrey had the most receptions by a running back in a single season in NFL history, which he did last year. Since entering the league in 2017, McCaffrey leads all running backs with 235 receptions, with four receptions Sunday against the Atlanta Falcons, which he will accomplish. He will surpass Hall of Fame running back LaDainian Tomlinson, who had 236 receptions. For the most receptions by a running back in their first three seasons in NFL history. So he's going to pass that. So there's no if about that at all. And for you, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers fans down there. Now, Tampa Bay, yes, they're struggling. They always show a lot of signs, a lot of good signs. Inconsistencies there, here and there, but that's all right. But despite all of that, you know, the Bucs still have some good things to talk about. The wide receivers, Mike Evans, who have 924 receiving yards, and Chris Godwin had 840 receiving yards. Evans second in the league, Godwin fourth in the league in receptions, respectively, this season. If Godwin had at least 60 receiving yards against the New Orleans Saints, Evans and Godwin would become the fourth pair of teammates each with at least 900 receiving yards through the team's first 10 games in NFL history. So this is going to be something that they can pair themselves to, how the Denver Broncos was able to do it in 2014 when Emmanuel Sanders had 954 yards and Demetrius Thomas had 1,105 yards. And the greatest show on turf in 2000, Isaac Bruce had 1,094 yards and Torrey Holt had 945 yards. So Godwin and Evans can join this elite group if Godwin was to receive 70 receiving yards, which he will get. For some reason, the Saints play so much better. The Bucs play so much better at home against the Saints. So this is going to be one of those games to watch out for and say, hey, look, it's not going to be an easy game for the Saints either, because they do struggle when they in that atmosphere as well. Now, one last thing to watch out for, making it look easy, Mike Thomas, wide receiver for the New Orleans Saints. He leads the NFL with receptions at 86 and receiving yards with 1,027. Now, last week, Thomas had 407 receptions. Since 2011, he was able to surpass Jarvis Landry, wide receiver for the Cleveland Browns, for the most receptions through a player's first four seasons in NFL history and reached 400 receptions in the fewest games in league history with 56. With four receptions on Sunday against the Bucs, he will surpass Hall of Famer Marvin Harrison and Julio Jones for the most receptions by a player through his team's first 10 games in a season in NFL history. So that's going to be awesome. Marvin Harrison in 2002 had 89, and Julio Jones in 2015 had 89 as well. So it's going to be something to see, something to watch out for. We're going to take a quick pause, come back, and get into some more football. Thank you for listening to Locker Talk. Welcome back to Locker Talk with Barry Barnes on Bassett News Radio Network, where you hear about NFL stars of tomorrow today. I'm your host, Barry Barnes, founder and CEO of Locker-Report.com. And you guys always go to that site to find out some unique content on the NFL that you will not receive anywhere else. And you also reach out to me in one of my social handles on Twitter, Locker_Report, Instagram, Locker Report 100, all small caps, Facebook, Lock Report, or you always simply shoot me a message directly via email at barrybarnes@locker-report.com. All right, now we talked about on half the show about what to look for week 11. Now we're going to get to the element that one of the things I love to talk about, and it's the NFL officials, which I call the NFL caretakers, because it takes a lot of love and tender love and care to be able to monitor this game. It's a lot that goes into this game behind the scenes. Trust me when I say this. And I know that everyone always, you know, have a lot of fans in the media. They're so quick to try to bash this, bash the officials, which is not cool, because everyone is trying to do someone else's job. You know, you go to work, you always have that one person, whether if you're in a management position or whatever position that you have, that you know that your duties are your duties. But yet you always have people that want to signify, and people always want to try to tell you what you're not doing and what you should do. And you know for a fact, like, listen, I know what I'm supposed to do. Mind your business. Let me handle my job. I understand that you see that I may have all this paperwork piled up. You understand that, okay, my name probably get called out in meetings a little more than others, but don't try to tell me my job. I know what I have to do. I have a game plan laid out. Just mind your business. Do what you're supposed to do. Do your job. Let me do mine. I'm making the right corrections to make sure that I execute my job correctly. And this is how I equate with officiating. Everybody want to try to tell these guys what they are not doing. They're not doing this right. They're not doing that right. And my favorite part is that it's easy. I can even do that job. I remember I had this one situation. My son practice, and I'll get right back to my main topic, but it's in relation to this, referee actually, who his son actually played on my son's team, and they got into the conversation, talked about a call that was made on an NFL game. This was last year, and then I don't know who the guy is. I never met him before. I saw him in a couple of practices and a couple of games, but he just happened to be standing right beside me with three other guys, and he was talking about football and the guys who are officiating, and then he just went and said, those guys don't know what they're doing. I can do that job. I immediately cut them off and said, excuse me, no, you cannot. There's nothing that you can do to compare yourself to what an NFL official goes through. And so I pretty much, in a brief, kind way, basically put them in this place to let them know that your little itty-bitty football knowledge that you have as far as officiating, it is compared to nothing about what the speed of the game and what the NFL level is. You'll get on the NFL football field, and I told him, you'll hear a flower. So, and after that, I never talked to that guy again. But anyway, there was this little talent thing I had to go into it, because sometimes I got to make sure I don't do a Myles Garrett and not flip out. Because I know this, you know, to be true. And I know that these guys work their tail off to make sure they get it right. And The biggest topic this season has been the new pass interference rule. So when they put that in, this is like everyone's new pet peeve now. You know, they want to make sure they monitor this. And was thinking that the officials was not getting it right, thinking they was having their errors in that. But let me just give you a little bit of scope on how that has been working out this season. Between weeks 1 and 7, there have been 7 reversals in past interference-related reviews, which is okay. They got they pulled back 7. That's great, but it's out of 40. Since week 3, however, through week 7, NFL coaches have a losing record against pass interference challenges, as they only succeeded one time out of 21 attempts. Now, coaches and fans alike need to understand that the new pass interference review rule was not intended to re-officiate, but rather to correct obvious errors. In translation, the standard to overturn a call in the field is a very high bar. And let me read that one more time. That the new pass interference rule was not intended to re-officiate. It's not to try to get those guys to redo everything that was done. It's just for those obvious ones that can happen in blur. Because like I said, the NFL is not it's a game that I equate as being a blink of an eye sport, and sometimes mistakes can happen. Fans make mistakes all the time. Coaches make mistakes all the time. I make mistakes all the time. I make dozens of them on this show. Your listener, you make mistakes all day long, but you don't have no one coming to you telling you every single thing that you did was wrong. And you wouldn't like it if someone came and told you everything that you did was wrong, or you should have noticed that, or you should have recognized that. No one does that. And the officials in a situation where, although it's a public sport, it's the most magnified sport in America, and everyone feels as though they can be a critic and feels as though they can tell someone what to do, be quiet about it because you really don't know. But there are things that's been instituted through the player, through the competition committee, with the league, and it's an official job to go out and execute it. And this is what they're doing. And with those numbers just laying it out for you, how the coaches now feel as though that they're not going to win these challenges. The coaches still going to try, but if it's not there and if it's not obvious, the rule on the field that these guys are able to pick up in this blink of an eye sport is remarkable. And there's nothing short for excellence that these guys are still on the NFL field. And speaking of excellence, on call or on good on the field calls, I have a couple of them right here that I'm about to detail and break down. In week 5, we all saw this. Thursday night game, Los Angeles Rams, Seattle Seahawks. When Russell Wilson put a perfect pass in the back corner post, left post of the end zone. Referee Scott Novak and his crew had some highlights in that game. That was the only big one they had. And so we know about that particular one, which was great. But the one that stood out also, which was really good, because just to give props to the side judge in that play for Chad Hill, to be able to watch at the same time now that there was a catch, there was control, and he recognized that Tyler Lockett's both his toes were inbound. So there's 3 things that Hill had to watch: the catch, control, and the feet, and he recognized it did not need help from instant replay. Solid on-field call. In the same game, in the second quarter, 5 minutes and 37 seconds left, running back Todd Gurley took a handoff from quarterback Jared Goff on 1st and 10 from the Seattle's 20-yard line. Gurley bounced out, took the ball in between the tackles, got stuffed by the Seattle Seahawks defensive end, Jadeveon Clowney. While Gurley was falling down, the ball was coming out, and Clowney recovered the ball. Now, line judge Walt Coleman IV ran to the pile, waving his hand. Now, umpire Roman George actually went into the pile. His hat fell off. It was funny. Examined the outcome closely, looked back at Coleman, and with a loud yell, definitely saying, blue ball, blue ball. Coleman, Novak, and George pointed to the opposite direction of the field favoring the Seahawks. Back judge Terrence Mills was there to help clear the pile. So for George to jump into that pile just to make sure for those guys, for Walt Coleman to recognize and George to recognize that there was clearly a fumble. Only thing they wanted to make sure that in the pile, because anything happened in the pile, wanted to see who had the ball. George got into the mix, called blue ball, Seattle's ball, good officiating. Did not need instant replay to recover that. Good officiating in that game. Same week, week five, Baltimore Ravens, Pittsburgh Steelers. In the third, number four, this was with 7 minutes and 6 seconds left in the game. On 3rd and 10 from the Ravens' 1 yard line, Lamar Jackson, with a shotgun formation, deep in his end zone, took the snap, handed the ball, the inside hand off to Gus Edwards, and he ran right in the middle. And then he met defensive tackles, Cameron Haywood, and defensive end J.T. Watt. And then that's where you know they met him, stuffed him, grabbed him, pulled him back. Excuse me. The first thing you thought. Because the Steelers got a safety. That's when you saw Dow Judge Tom Stephan and then line judge Byron Boston of Walt Coleman's group. They approached the spot on the play. Both players witnessed Edwards' forward progress in the midst of the crowd. And they put the ball, and he recognized that the ball did cross over to the side of the goal line. What appeared to be a safety, they recognized that his forward progress got him out of the end zone. No replay for that. They nailed it. The Ravens got the ball and was able to punt instead of it being a critical safety in the favor for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Solid call there. Same week, week five was really busy. Jets versus the Eagles. With 38 seconds left in the first half on the Jets' 11-yard line on 2nd and 10, Eagles quarterback Carson Wentz received the ball from shotgun formation and threw across the middle to tight end Zach Ertz. Ertz caught the ball in stride, and the Jets cornerback Darrell Roberts shadowed him and tackled him into the end zone. Now, Ertz got up and pointed to the field judge, Lane Clark from Adrian Hill's crew, and Clark automatically gave the touchdown signal. Now, there wasn't one of those situations where Hurts was trying to, I would say, bully the official or bully Clark and say, hey, you better call this touchdown. It wasn't like that. What Clark recognized in perfect view was that when Zerk's position on the field, he witnessed Zach, how he caught the ball, had control, saw that his right knee hit the ground at the Jets' 1 yard line. However, what Clark also witnessed that when Zach was falling to the ground and when his knee hit the ground, he already extended the ball across the goal line. So it was simultaneously, as soon as the knee hit, the ball was over the goal line. Solid officiating, good call, recognizing no instant replay needed for that. Clear touchdown, solid call from Clark in that situation, in that game then. Week six, Steelers and the Chargers. This right here, I would say, was good teamwork. With 7 minutes and 18 seconds left in this game, the Chargers faced 3rd and 5 from the Steelers' 5-yard line. Chargers quarterback, Philip Rivers, received the ball from shotgun formation, threw the ball to a high toss in the back part of the end zone to Hunter Henry. Hunter Henry leaped high enough over the Steelers' defensive back Archie Burns for the pass, and back judge Brad Freeman of John Hesse's crew had ruled it incomplete. However, field judge Allen Burns and Jabari Walker, side judge, ventured over to Burns in media and confirmed that Henry had controlled the ball. He had both feet in bounds. After a quick conversation, these guys ruled a touchdown. It's a replay show what Walker and Allen had seen. Solid officiating. That was some of the stuff there, recognizing what the officials did. Make sure you guys tune in to next week on Lock and Talk as we talk about the NFL Regional Combine guys, what they did in the first half of the season and how, what to expect for the second half of the season for offense and defense. Make sure you guys tune in. Check us out on the Bachelor News Radio Network. Always shoot me a message directly at one of my handles, Twitter, Locker_Report, Instagram, LockReport100, also on Cast, or Facebook, LockReport.com. Everyone stay blessed and enjoy Week 11. All right. Hey, guys. Thanks for taking in to Lock and Talk. We're here and listen to the show on Fridays from 9 to 9:30. We're going to have a quick look into Week 12 of the NFL season. Again, this is Lock and Talk, host Barry Barnes from the Bachelor News Radio Network, where you guys on Fridays can hear about NFL stars of tomorrow, today. And make sure you guys tune in this Friday because I want to talk about the first half of the season in regards to the players from the NFL Regional Combine, both the offense and the defense. What some of the players stood out and what to expect from those players, those same players, and some other names to watch out for when it's the second half of the season. But right now, we're going to get into NFL tendencies for Week 12. And we got some goodies as the playoff push begins. It actually started last week with the Cleveland Browns and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Everything kicked off of that. Really was not too many implications with that game last week, but the Browns won. You know, considering what they're going through, I really don't see it being too much of a big thing. But, however, anything can happen. That's why the NFL is so great. But going to Week 12, we have a solid lineup, and it starts Thursday night with the Colts and the Texans. Two teams were definitely in the hunt for a playoff spot, especially the Texans. Now, the Texans are at home. The Colts is trying to get themselves back into the flow before Jacoby Brissett had injured his knee. Now, the Colts definitely themselves in the uphill battle with some devastating loss in the last couple of weeks with teams that they, quote-unquote, should have beaten. But that's the part about this playoff push. They're not only the teams that you're expecting to see, but it's always those teams that you don't expect to win to win, and they definitely fell victim to that when they lost to the Miami Dolphins over there in Week 10. But this game here, tendencies is that the Texans normally win and get to that postseason time. They normally make the right plays during the mid part in trying to get a playoff berth. So I do see the Texans doing what they're supposed to do with Deshaun Watson, with an improved offensive line, making some things happen against the Colts Thursday night as they continue to keep their, not only their push for a playoff spot, but to win a division overall. The Buffalo Bills, they in the hunt still. The Broncos, they're not. So this is one of those games that to see, can the Bills muster up consistency on the offense side of the ball? The defense is relied on a lot this season. But what the defense needs to do is to get back focused, turn it back into the way how they were playing early on in the season. And they are. They're not, you know, struggling out there. But the most important thing, the Bills want to make sure they find more consistency to help take some pressure off their defense. Now, this young Buffalo Bills team really have not shown anything on paper as far as what we consider as tendencies. But the thing is, when you have a young quarterback, second-year quarterback, when it's time for a playoff push, when they're in a situation where they can actually make a run, sometimes they will overthink certain things. Now, I'm not saying the Broncos are going to win this game. I still believe that on the strength of the Bills' defense, this team is going to make it. However, you will see Josh Allen make some mistakes because that pressure and trying to get to the postseason is real, and they will feel it against the Denver Broncos team that's going to come in ready to go and will not back down to the big bad Buffalo Bills up in Orchard Park. Now, another big game here. I want to say a big game. You know, the Steelers, for what it's worth, do they still have a chance? It's slightly. But if they want to have a chance to get to the postseason, and barring that, health-wise, and you had, you know, Juju Smith-Schuster to get go down and James Conner go down last week against the Browns, Mason Rudolph has to play much better. I mean, before the injuries, he was looking really bad in that pocket. I wouldn't be surprised, and deep down inside Mike Tomlin's heart, he probably would think he should have just kept Josh Dobbs, because at least that young man would have been able to make plays with his legs. The way Mason had played in week 11 against the Browns, he was horrible. And for some reason, he just did not feel any pressure in that pocket. I mean, and he was just standing there, and the Browns kept teeing off on him. So he had to make plays and make stuff happen and not go happy-go-lucky for the Steelers, because this is not the Steelers' way. I never count the Steelers out, because the Steelers is always one of those franchises always going to do well. But Mason Rudolph got to play much better, and he cannot be lackadaisical out there in the pocket. Do I see them winning this game? I do. But the Chicago Bengals team is not going to let it be an easy fight. So it all comes down to Mason's attitude and his execution, and play with a little bit more heart and go after it and not play the way how he did when he played against the Browns. Saints and Panthers. Now, the Saints, you know, definitely had the ups and downs of recent, of late, and the Panthers are still trying to find their way, so to speak. I'm not going to say find their way, but recognizing with their new quarterback, Cal Allen, knowing that they put past the Cam Newton thing for the rest of this year, it's time to buckle down and it's time to fight. This is going to be an awesome matchup. The Saints are back home. They should be able to rebound from this game and allow their Hall of Famer, Drew Brees, get out there and do his thing, use his weapons that he has out there so that this team can actually get back to the way how they was early in the season, as they are one of the top three best teams in the league. Seattle and Philly, this is going to be a good game. Seattle come to Philadelphia to take on the Eagles. This is going to be a good game here. Tennessee's in this game. Tennessee's for both teams. Seattle, Russell Wilson, they always come through. The Eagles, Carson Wentz is normally hurt around this time of the season. Let's see how this team will fare. Carson Wentz is going to be in a situation they haven't been in the past couple of years, in a situation where he's in the driver's seat and having his team in position to make a playoff run before that one year when he was in MVP talks until he got injured. This is his first time carrying the team since then where he's actually in more control. Let's see how he's carried through. Tennessee is that the Seattle Seahawks win these type of games on the road to strengthen their chances and not only getting a good seed in their conference, but to combat against the 49ers and get in and win that division, because there's still life there for them in that regard. Dallas Cowboys fighting to stay alive. They're going to Foxborough to take on the Patriots. That's going to be a tough game. You know, these indoor teams want to play in some inclement weather. Tom Brady and these guys is focused. It's their time of the year. Tennessee is. The Patriots always make it right at this time of year. They're making their adjustments. I don't think the Cowboys really have anything for them. They definitely want to make sure Zeke is running this ball to help keep Tom Brady, number 12, on the sideline. But Tennessee's are that the Patriots want to make those plays. They will make that think a little bit more, and that's when you will definitely have your turnovers, and the Patriots will take over and have their fun with that. And then that Sunday night game with the Packers and the 49ers. 49ers at home, I think they can take that, but if they challenge, as you recognize these guys in the situation where the Packers will take the lead, that's when you're going to see Jimmy Garoppolo, like last week when he went against the Seattle Seahawks, second guess himself a lot. Let's see what will happen with that game to see if the 49ers can hold off on that. And then the Monday night game, Baltimore goes to Los Angeles. Nice weather. I hope the Rams are ready for this physical game, but at the same time, I hope the Ravens are ready for this type of game that the Rams are going to throw at them, because they have a stout defensive front there in L.A. So tendencies are. The Rams don't even try to hold out. There's a new Ravens team. Let's see what kind of pressure they put on Lamar Jackson. Let's see if they're going to make him be more of a throw of the ball, or they're going to continue to keep on steamrolling these teams with his legs. Now, that's your NFL tendencies for Week 12. Make sure you check out Locker Talk this Friday from 9 to 9:30, where we'll talk about the NFL Regional Combine players, my main focus of the NFL, of what the guys did in the first half of the season and what to expect the second half of the season. Tune in. Thank you for tuning in to the Bassett News Radio Network. I'm your host, Barry Barnes. Everyone, have a blessed week.
Welcome to Pro Talk with the Mighty Oba and our special guest commentator, George the Radman Radney from the Challenger Community News, as we talk about the NFL this week. How you doing, George?
Great. Mighty Oba, good to see you. Good to be here once again under these hot lights. It's a beautiful place to be, especially when it's so freezing cold outside.
It is cold outside, but buddy, we are headed to Miami this week.
Yes.
But we're going to talk about the week as it went by. It started off with an upset. I didn't think the Los Angeles Chargers have really struggled this season.
Mm-hmm.
Phillip Rivers does not look like he can play this game at a very high level anymore. They lost to the Oakland Raiders on Thursday night, 26-24. And, you know, Derek Carr, he's had a decent season. And he's performed within the framework of the system, right?
Yes, Derek Carr has been a good quarterback. I mean, he broke his leg the one year he was having a good season. He ended up breaking the leg right near the end of that season, couldn't finish. I've always been impressed with Derek Carr. I think he's a good quality quarterback, and you get him with the right system. And John Gruden is an offensive-minded coach, and you're seeing he got hard-nosed running backs. I love those running backs. Josh Jacobs, oh, my gosh. He goes in between the tackles and do what you're supposed to do. You can't arm tackle him. You got to wrap him up and hit him and to bring him down.
And Detroit went to Chicago. They lost to the Bears. They did not have Stafford. That was huge for them.
Oh, yeah.
Jeff Driscoll did have a respectable game. He threw for 269 yards. But they fell short against the Chicago Bears. Bears have struggled this season.
Exactly. And you said Driscoll threw for how much?
269.
Wow. What did our guy do?
Our guy threw for 260.
Wow, and that's like a year. And this guy, first time playing, right?
Right,
that's,
right.
That's the point I'm getting at. Wow.
Yeah, 266 to be exact.
Wow.
Well, let's get to the Buffalo Bills against the Cleveland Browns. This is a game, once again, we talked about it last week.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Chubb ran all over the Bills.
He did.
Critical yards. The Bills' defense has not been able to stop the run in 3 to 4 games.
They're not physical at all. We're seeing that. They're being exposed as not being a physical defense up the middle. It took almost, what, 5-6 guys to bring Chubb down, and sometimes they couldn't even bring him down. The referee just blew the whistle, and they just had to stop it. You know, they stopped his momentum. But just to see how they couldn't bring Nick Chubb to the ground with one or two guys, you had to have 5-6 guys, that's it's completely embarrassing to see something like that.
Jarvis Landry had a very good game, 97 yards in receiving, had some critical plays, also had a very critical penalty. Obviously, the rivalry between LSU and Alabama kicked off between him and Levi Wallace after that touchdown grab.
Because you got to remember, it was less than 24 hours after that game was concluded the day before, so they all were jacked up for this game.
Well, one thing we need to look at with the Buffalo Bills again, Brian Daboll, as an offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
This offense can't score.
No, he should have been called. But you look at his record. His offense couldn't score the last five places he's been. He's only being an offensive coordinator. Let's get right to the point. He's only become an offensive coordinator because of Bill Belichick, because he was on his coaching staff Everywhere he goes, oh, because you with Belichick, we're going to make you the offensive coordinator here. No, that's not Kansas City. Everywhere he went, this guy has had sorry offenses. So why does he keep getting a job? Why does he even have a job?
It's beyond me. You're up against the 30th ranked rushing defense in football.
Yes.
And you come out throwing the ball.
Right.
And his pundits, and the people I call pundits, are people that work for the organization or receive a lot of funding for an organization. They said because there were eight people in the box. There's always going to be eight people in the box when they want you to throw the ball.
Right.
But you're supposed to attack a defense, am I right?
You should attack the defense. You really should attack them. And why weren't you trying to attack them? And why wouldn't you even use Sonoris Perry to assist run the – why is he on the field as a, only a special team only, and you have T.J. Yeldon not even active?
Hasn't been active in weeks.
And you notice we've been losing those games that he's been inactive. We haven't looked good. The offense has looked worse. Why won't you bring a guy that you know can catch the ball out of the backfield, get him in there, give him a few touches, get Devin Singletary touches, go up the middle. You should have ran all over the Cleveland Browns right in the middle of their line. That's their weakest point, and we chose to try to let our quarterback win the game.
If there's anything about Cleveland that is a strength, it's their pass rush. I mean, you're talking about Myles Jarrett is a premier pass rusher in this league. And it seems that Brian Daboll, his play calls kind of feed into the strength of the defense
of the
rather
opponent.
Than attacking their weaknesses. I just didn't get that.
It really does. He does that week in and week out. He's the same guy. How are you going to leave a young quarterback like that hanging? Josh Allen is not a very good quarterback to begin with, number one. Number two, can he look better? Yes. If you take the best offensive coordinator in the league and put him on the Bills coaching staff and work with Josh Allen for a season, Josh Allen would look a little bit better. But he's just not an accurate quarterback. And when you're not accurate, you can't win it at any level.
Now, his strength was supposed to be the long ball. He can't hit the backside of a bar.
Oh, my God.
His long ball is horrible.
It's horrible. It's horrible.
It's just not – there are receivers that are open – it's not even close, is
it? Not even close. Because John Brown had – I tell you one thing, Denzel Ward and the rest of those defensive backs at Cleveland, they don't want to see John Brown no more.
No.
Because he was killing them. He was cutting them and breaking. And that one where he went to the middle of the field and then broke to the sideline, Denzel Ward was still in the middle of the field. He was calling for the ball. And by the time Josh Allen threw in the ball, he had to reach down to catch it and then turn around and then dive to the ground where the guy almost took his head off. If he would have caught him in stride, it was a touchdown. It was an easy touchdown
right,
throw.
Right, right. And what about Sean McDermott? I mean, we have to look.
Sean McDermott.
The guy is having some issues.
He goes
off on a reporter a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, nobody's talking about that. Today is media day. He cuts off. He gets mad at the media for asking questions about comparing Tyrod Taylor and Josh Allen. And, you know, their stats are looking really familiar.
Very familiar.
But you ran Tyrod out of here.
Right.
So he got mad, and he left after 9 minutes today, and his demeanor it needs to be called in question. But most importantly, his coaching decisions have to be called in question.
And his coaching of hiring coaches.
Right.
Why would you hire a guy that never been successful as offensive coordinator to go with your prize quarterback? That's almost like you buying a brand new car, a fancy Jaguar, but not driving it, or it can go 100 miles an hour, but you live in the city. You're not going anywhere where you can go on an open road and drive it 100 miles an hour at a time. So what's the use in having that feature on your car if you can't use it?
Made a decision to go for a fourth down early in the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
We both said that they should kick the field goal. You then said that maybe something's wrong with Hauschka.
Yes.
Come to find out today, we spoke to Stephen Hauschka, and he basically somewhat admitted to me that he was not right.
Right. And something like that, if you saw him kicking his point, because he wasn't, you could tell he wasn't taking full strides. He was just gliding into the ball. He didn't let his leg hang back, which to me detects a groin injury. He has some type of pulled groin, some type of muscle is pulled because he carried his leg. He didn't glide his leg back and he kicked it like a soccer player. Get that little oomph into the ball.
Mm-hmm.
He just glided into it and just lightly kicked the ball. That's why the ball was like 10 yards short of the goal line on that 52-yarder attempt. And with the, and that's coaching. When you know your kicker is hurt, and I know they had to know he was hurt
right.
Friday, Saturday, or whatever, they knew something. Why wouldn't you go out on the waiver wire, pick up a kicker just for the game, and have him come in and kick for you on in that game?
Just in case.
Just in case. Yeah. Have him kick for you for that particular game. Because you could see your guy was not capable of making – I don't think he was capable of making an extra point, really.
Right. He struggled throughout the game, and obviously he was not right. And I just questioned some of the decision-making of this organization. George, another thing, too, about Sunday's game with the Cleveland Browns, we just refuse to run the football. This time of year is power football. The Bills have been averaging 4.9 yards a carry, but they won't get the guys that you got the football. Devin Singletary is a playmaker. Frank Gore has been steady for you the entire year. T.J. Yeldon has been inactive. Why are they not allowing the running backs to make plays in this offense?
That's very puzzling. That shows you
no
coaching.
Screen passes.
No screen passes. It's crazy that they don't run any screen passes. That would have been perfect last week against Cleveland's, especially Myles Garrett. The way he was beating Dawkins and coming around that corner, I would have came with some screens right at his side of the field and set it up and use that. You got to use, and they used to use screens almost every week. And for them not to run the ball, where's the head coach? Where's McDermott at in that? He should be telling them, no, man, run the ball. Don't pass. No, let's run a little more. And when you got late in the game and they needed that field goal to tie, they knowing your kicker is hurt, why wouldn't you go get the ball down the field farther? Why would you just settle for being for that far
53.
Away?
Why did they aggressively attack? It just seemed I just scratched my head.
Yeah.
You know your kicker's not right, and you're going to trot him out there for a 53-yarder? He wasn't even close.
He wasn't even close. So you should have just went for it, knowing that your kicker wasn't right. Go for it on fourth down. And this goes to the old adage that you keep hearing, too. Very few defensive coordinators make good head coaches. Very few of those guys are successful. Belichick right now is one of the most successful of all time of a defensive coordinator becoming a head coach. It's something about those guys. Now, notice his picks. He'll go and find guys on the waiver wire for the defense. He found Corey Lugent, who used to be a big-time star with the Chargers, always liked his style of play. He also played with the Raiders. Then he went to the Chargers, done very well. You find a quality guy like that. Why can't you find a quality lineman? Why can't you find somebody, some quality players to help your quarterback?
Right.
Or find you another quarterback that can help Josh Allen. If Barkley's the guy, put Barkley in some of these games when this guy's struggling and let him watch and see how you're supposed to do your reads, how you're supposed to drop back and don't get flustered and look downfield and show him how to get that ball placement. You got to have somebody showing this guy needs to sit.
You're supposed to win games that your defense only allows 19 points. 19 points is a winnable game in the NFL. Mm-hmm. But this team has only scored 3 out of 9 games, 20 points or more.
That's startling.
That's crazy.
That's crazy.
And in one game, the defense basically puts you in position to score 2 touchdowns.
Absolutely.
So
it's getting to the point where Josh Allen is a nice guy, but he is what the scouting department said he was. He's raw. He's not a legitimate NFL quarterback. The Bills look quite stupid jumping from 12 all the way down to number 7 to pick this guy up. And you let Lamar Jackson go by. You let Deshaun Watson. You let all kinds of – Daniel Jones, heck, you let him go. You let all kinds of quarterbacks that are coming in the league, Kyler Murray, Daniel Jones, even though he's turned the ball over with the New York Giants, he's thrown for 3 touchdowns. He's thrown for over 300 yards.
How about Hoskins?
Hoskins
was there.
Yeah.
You chose Ed Oliver.
Ed Oliver
has proven that he is too small. Teams are going to attack him when he's in the game. He's small.
And they're making Ed Oliver look bad because that's not his true position.
Right.
Not in the NFL. He's an edge rusher. He has speed. But you can't see his speed because he's being clobbered up by a 320-pound offensive lineman.
How about Star Lotulelei?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. He's making what? About
$12 million.
$12 million a year. You cut Marcel Darius. You embarrass Marcel Darius. You had the Pegulas embarrass Marcel Darius. Off the field, and you're saying, well, Marcel's not a leader. Well, we know Star Lotulelei is definitely not a leader. He can't lead anything but let guys run him over and pick up first downs. But this Brandon Bean and McDermott do not know how to build a football team, and now we're seeing that McDermott doesn't know how to coach a football team either.
Yeah, and your best defensive lineman is on a one-year deal, and that's Jordan Phillips. If I'm him, mm-hmm. we're not even talking until you start at $12 million, because that's what Starter Tule is making.
Yeah.
And I'm not even talking to you unless we start at $12 million and up. I think Jordan Phillips is going to get a big contract at the end of the year. It'll be interesting to see if the Bills will be able to even keep him.
And you got Tre'Davious White. They'll obviously keep him for a fifth year. But you really need to start talking to his people about start locking him up. The way he handled Beckham.
He did a great
OBJ
job.
On Sunday. He did a great. He shows you he's an all-pro player. He's a prime-time player.
And you've got Micah Hyde and Jordan Poirier on the back end, but
yeah.
you're allowing teams. When I talk to most of the Bills today, the basic bottom line of the defense is we have got to stop the run.
Mm-hmm.
The last 3 weeks, we've allowed teams to have a 100-yard rusher against us, and they're marching up and down the field. We have got to stop the run. That's what the defense is saying this week, Jerry
mm-hmm.
Hughes and everybody else. But another thing, too, about this defense of Sean McDermott through Leslie Frazier, it's a defense that they like to drop defensive linemen back into coverage.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I think it wastes the rush ability of a Jerry Hughes dropping him into coverage on
yeah.
many plays.
Yes,
I just don't agree with that.
Yeah, it does. Lorenzo Alexander, you're dropping him back. You should be dropping Edmonds back. I like Edmonds. He has a wingspan. He can cover, and he's fast. I can see covering him in there. But Edmonds comes into question, too. Why is he not making plays as a middle linebacker?
Well, he got a safety this week.
Mm-hmm.
We give him that. That was a big-time play. I thought Sunday might have been one of his better games as a pro.
That's true.
But maybe he would be better on the outside rather
definitely.
Than in the middle.
He's more of an outside suitor. And see, that's what I don't get with McDermott and Bean. They draft quality guys, but they're putting them in the wrong position.
Right.
They're not putting them in the best position. How are you going to draft at number 9, Ed Oliver, and put him in inside, put him on the inside, and knowing that he's only 285 pounds and he's going up against guys minimum 300 at week in and week out? Why would you do that? You're not setting Ed Oliver up to win. You're not setting Tremaine Edmonds up to win. Move him to the outside and get you a bona fide middle linebacker.
Right.
The guy from LSU, Devin White, he went fifth overall, but I would have been trying to make a move to move up to get. Can you imagine if you had him in the middle?
Absolutely.
And have Edmonds on the outside?
Big time.
Oh, man. You,
big
you,
time.
You,
now,
set.
One other game I want to talk about before we talk about next week, Pittsburgh Steelers defeat the Los Angeles Rams 17-12.
Mm-hmm.
Pittsburgh is now 5-4.
Yeah.
Without his quarterback, without his star receiver, people in Pittsburgh before were talking about firing Mike Tomlin.
Yeah, when he was 1-4. And now he's come back. And you can imagine, man, what kind of locker room that was with A.B., Antonio Brown in there, and Le'Veon Bell. And man, just think of all the stuff that Mike Tomlin had to put up with there in Pittsburgh. But he comes out, he coaches well, he doesn't, you know, he shows you some emotion. But he gets his guys up week in and week out. They found a way to win. And I think they're going to go into Cleveland and find a way to win on Thursday Night Football. I really think they're going to be able to handle, because Freddie Kitchen going to find a way to screw things up, especially if the game is close.
Kitchen just out-coached Sean McDermott.
Right.
Freddie Kitchen.
after botching up
yes.
some early action. I mean, he
went eight times in the five.
Eight times inside
worst
the five.
Worst play calling I've seen.
I know. And he was another one. He was running toward the Bills' strength of not going up the middle, but going to the outside. You don't run on the Bills. Our linebackers and outside edge rushers are pretty decent. Corey Luger, the new guy that came in, he made a big play. He made a big stop on the fourth
right.
down play. So you don't go to the outside. Freddie Kitchen he just can't help himself. He just doesn't know. He just doesn't have the experience or the wherewithal to be good.
All right, let's preview. Next week's games, it starts.
One last quick
what
comment.
What do you got?
What about the four tight ends? We got four tight ends and none of them are good.
They're terrible.
None of them are good.
None of them.
Why would you draft? Why would you get Irv Smith Jr., draft, that's your tight end, get a blocking tight end. Okay, Lee Smith can be your blocking tight end. Why would you go draft a backup by the name of Dawson Knox? A backup. And to me.
That's what he is.
Watching preseason in the first two games of the season, Sweeney was the best guy, the kid from in the seventh round out of Boston College. You haven't. He hasn't seen the field.
Hasn't seen the field
since Dawson Knox got.
And I thought he was. He looked better than Dawson Knox during the preseason.
And he certainly can catch better than Dawson Knox. So
absolutely.
Their decision making is horrible over
right.
there at One Bills Drive.
Right. All right. Let's get into next week. We're down to about 8 minutes left here. We're going to start with Pittsburgh at Cleveland.
Okay.
Big time game. What are you seeing in there?
I've seen a good defensive struggle. I'm seeing the Steelers very well coached. The Cleveland Browns not very well coached. I see a close game. Cleveland has the momentum after getting that win under their belt, beating the Bills on Sunday, and turning around and playing on Thursday night. Going into their locker room, they all talk with Kareem Hunt. All of them talk very confident. But I think the Steelers, with their veteran presence and veteran players and veteran leadership on the field and head coach, I think the Steelers are going to find a way to win it.
All right. Picking up
Take the Steelers and
Pittsburgh.
The
points. Pittsburgh and the points. Dallas at Detroit.
Oh, I think Detroit is if Matthew Stafford is playing, I think Detroit might win this game because their defense is they're good enough to handle the Cowboys. The Cowboys, they're finding a way to lose. Now they're finding a way to lose. They slept on the Vikings on Sunday. The Vikings ran all over them. Watch for Detroit. Detroit's giving everybody trouble. So I would call the upset. Take the Detroit and the 6 points or the 5.5 points. Take the points and go with Detroit for this one.
New Orleans at Tampa Bay. What's going on with the Saints?
Another divisional game. Those guys are waking up. Well, keep in mind, the real rivalry is the Atlanta Falcons. The Falcons just decided, hey, we're not going anywhere, but the one thing we are going to do is we're going to beat our arch rival. And they set it in their mind, we're not going to let New Orleans. We may lose to everybody else, but we darn sure not losing to the Saints. So that rivalry is strong. Atlanta put a beat down on them last week in New Orleans. I think New Orleans will rebound in Tampa with the win.
Atlanta at Carolina.
Atlanta. After I think they might be still celebrating that beatdown of New Orleans last week. And from New Orleans, they might have hung out there a little too long. Carolina. People are finding out how to figure out Kyle Allen, the quarterback. I think take Atlanta with the upset.
Jacksonville at Indianapolis.
Oh boy, a pick'em game. That's going to be a good one. Hopefully, if Kobe Brissett is back, I would take Indianapolis in this one. If he's playing. If he's not playing, watch out. I'll take the Jags. But right now, if I had to pick one team, I'll take Indianapolis in this one.
Denver at Minnesota.
Denver at Minnesota. Denver coming in most likely in double-digit 10 points. They're coming in from the cold and snow, going into another cold, snowy place, but they're playing indoors. So take Minnesota with the win here. Minnesota should win by 7.
New York Jets at Washington. New York is on a roll, baby.
Yeah, they are. They beat the Giants in a tough, in a high, man, that was a high scoring game. Wish we would have saw that one. And we haven't seen 37 and 24 points.
Not with the Bills.
Not within years, have they?
Bills don't score very many points.
They sure don't. They make you hard to watch them at times. But they, you know, it is what it is. The Jets at Washington, the young quarterback, Dwayne Haskins, is getting things under his belt. Watch for the Jets. I think the Jets are going to win this one. The momentum from winning last week will carry into this week. Watch for the Jets to beat Washington.
Buffalo travels to Miami.
Buffalo at Miami. This is going to be a close. Miami getting 6 points. Buffalo got to come in there. They got to stop the run. Miami will run the ball on them. Bills will pick up turnovers. I see Buffalo pulling this game out and winning it. Winning another close one. All of them are going to be close because our quarterback just can't get the ball in ball placement to the receivers in a timely fashion. Buffalo by 7.
Houston at Baltimore.
Houston at Baltimore. Oh, my goodness. Deshaun Watson against Lamar. Oh, man. Lamar Jackson, that should be a good game as well. I like Baltimore's putting up the points. I would take Baltimore in this game. I think it'll be a shootout. Take the over in this game. If any of you putting a little change, a little quarters on the game, take the over.
Arizona at San Francisco.
Arizona at San Francisco. Arizona getting around 12 points right now. I think by kickoff, it'll probably be down to 10. The 49ers were beat up physically by the Seahawks on Sunday. I think Arizona comes in, and they'll be able to put some points. I wouldn't be surprised to see Arizona win this game, but Arizona will cover the spread.
New England at Philadelphia. That's a great match.
Yeah. Oh, wow. We saw this at the Super Bowl a couple years ago.
It's a replay of the Super Bowl in Minneapolis.
In Minneapolis, yeah. And that was a good one. Philadelphia needs the game. New England coming off that beatdown in Baltimore. They're home to play Philly. It should be a good contest. It will be a good contest. My goodness, Philly really needs this game, and I think Philly's going to be up for this game. Watch for Philly to win, because I think their offensive, their defensive line is going to put so much pressure on New England's offensive line.
Cincinnati at Oakland.
Cincinnati at Oakland. Oakland will win this one hands down. Cincinnati then.
Really?
Cincinnati's running for the bus already. They
such
for the
an
bus.
Improvement since firing Marvin Lewis.
Yeah, I know. And not bringing Hugh Jackson back or nothing. You go with an unproven young kid who's not even as old as your starting quarterback.
Right. And we have Chicago at the L.A. Rams. Both teams are not performing at a level that we expected.
Exactly. I would go with the Rams in this one. Rams will bounce back and it would be a defensive struggle for a while. The Rams should be able to cover the spread and win this game coming up.
Well, those are our picks for this week. George, we're about to head down to Miami.
And before we go to Miami, this weekend, too, the Colin Kaepernick is getting a
tryout.
Saturday.
For all NFL teams. Is it a stunt?
It's in Atlanta.
It's in Atlanta, but is it a stunt? Is it serious? Because if it's serious, one of these teams or several of these teams should be offering him a contract. He's not received any tryouts the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
But from the bad quarterback play that we're seeing in the NFL, there's absolutely no way you could tell me that Colin Kaepernick should not come away with some offer from another team.
See, and I really think nobody has really mentioned that on their commentaries about it. My commentary is because of the bad quarterback play and how bad it's getting, and you're seeing teams not even a combined score of under 37 points, where I never used to see the under being under 37 for a combined scores, and you're getting those scores.
Right.
But the Buffalo game was 19-16. I mean, you're getting horrible
quarterback
play. And because of that, I think they know, and plus the media thing surrounding Kaepernick, I think that was all led into that. Hey, you really need to do something and get this guy, give him a real chance. Right now we heard Miami's there, Denver's there, Dallas is there, Chicago's there. Those are teams that signed up already.
Pittsburgh should be there.
Why aren't the Bills there?
Bills should be there. Their quarterback is lackluster.
And they're playing in Miami, so they can fly right over from Atlanta and fly back to Miami for
absolutely.
The game.
Absolutely. Why not?
Why not?
You have a scouting department that could be there. So
send the league board over there.
Doesn't affect the guys that need to be there on a day-to-day basis.
Exactly. Get over there and check this guy out. And
are they serious? That's the question.
Well,
a lot of people are accusing the NFL of putting on a stunt and not giving him an honest opportunity to get on with the team.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. If they don't sign him, because they're going to have video. Everybody's going to get to see the video of him. So when we see the video, and if he's looking good and looking, and he can't look as bad as some of these guys we've seen out here playing.
Right.
Come on. If he's looking good and in shape, I think the pressure is going to force somebody to pick him up.
All right, last few seconds. What do you think about the Bills? Will they be able to stop the run? Miami's the first team that started running the football and exposed these guys' weakness against power football.
I say yes and no. They're going to run for a while. The Bills will be able to stop them for a while. And I think Fritz will come back with some turnovers to help the Bills out and give the Bills the win.
He basically lost the game here.
He lost the game
here. So he'll lose the game there.
Exactly. That's how I see it. Miami will have a chance to win it. And they done won two in a row, too.
All right. Thank you for tuning in to Pro Talk with the Mighty Oba. With our super commentator, the Rad Man from the Challenger Community News, we'll see you again next week right here on Pro Talk.
How we Yeah. I remember you and me, closer than the two can be. Now we're strangers in the night, awkward in the dark. Oh, baby, do you wanna make it better? Do you wanna stay together? Got a room at home. Go to a place that we don't know so well. It'd be nice. Add a little spice. Try some new seduction. Show each other how. Give each other new instructions on what makes us feel good now. I just wanna make you feel good now.
Feel good, darling.